By the way, I'm in New York, and I walked a mile, which is what I like to do, and my face froze off. But I guess that's just because I'm California climate accustomed. But I think my face is coming back to normal, everyone, so we can do this.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
From ABM to PLG, from Medic to MedPick, the world of business is constantly evolving. We'll cover the who, what, where, when, why, and most importantly, how you get the transaction. I'm Matt Amundson, and he's Craig Rosenberg. Let's get started.
So, Matt, we get to talk some marketing today. I think that's it's pretty exciting for us. You know, we talk a lot about how the playbook and how some of the things that have worked in the past aren't working, and we're always looking for new ideas. Which is how we found today's guest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the dream is to launch a campaign that goes quote unquote viral, or that quote unquote goes viral. That's what everybody's CEO sort of demands of them. And Mac, in the last year or so, you've done it twice. So we're really excited to dive a little deeper into the virality of marketing programs. Craig, over the course of your history, have you ever been a part of something that went viral?
I don't think so. I think I've done every trick in the book to just get to first base of viral. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
I do what I can to feel good about what I did, and I might be in the three digits, not in the seven. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So that's a good lead. Our guest today, by the way, Matt and I are just meeting today, which is new. And the reason is because we were sitting there like looking for great ideas, and we'll talk about this further. And Sam, our producer, is like, hey, you guys got to see what these guys Comsor did. And it was right in my wheelhouse because I'm a chicken wings fanatic. And like, it was like, oh my God, we got to talk to this guy. So we're just meeting today, but our guest is a founder. Like, I work in venture, so like when I saw your profile, I'm like, this dude is a founder dude.
Yeah,
he's a founder dude, right? Lots of bootstrap businesses in the past, and now the chairman of Dinosaurs or Dinos at Comsor. And that's why one of my favorite things when I look you up, it's like every time I see it, it's like, want a fun fact about dinosaurs, DM me. You know, you've been doing that, it seems like, four and a half, 5 years, and you've been doing some incredible stuff on the go-to-market and the virality side, as Matt likes to put it. And that for us is a big deal. We want new ideas, and that's why we're so excited to have you on the show. So everyone, our guest today, Mac Redden. Anything else you'd add? I just gave you a high level overview of you because you're just you're a classic, man.
Well, I don't know how to follow up from that. Thank you. I think you hit the nail on the head better than I would have.
Well, perfect. That's my goal. And Matt gives, it's one of the only thing Matt gives me some credit for is my lead in intros. I take great pride in them. And, usually I got to look through a whole, this was like, oh my God, I know this guy. So the way we like to start conversations is we're trying to find things where the market has a traditional view, a view of what they think is right, a view of what a best practice is. And we're looking for, where they're, you could say where they're wrong, like that you're not thinking about it in the right way.
Oh, I have so many versions of that.
Yeah, I know. When we think about having you on the show, I think the show epitomizes that. So start with that, a reaction to that statement, and then let's go from there.
I mean, my gut reaction to that statement is I think 99% of what go-to-market teams do is wrong or misguided today.
Woo!
That is a hot take.
All of it. It's and that isn't to say that 99% doesn't sometimes work. I just want to make sure that there's that distinction, right? And I think
We've
confused working and good ideas sometimes. Like they are not. They can be mutually exclusive. Over the last, call it 10 years, 15 years, whatever you want to do, I think so much of marketing and sales has trended towards absolute measurement. Everything has to be trackable. Mm. Everything has to be measurable. Everything has to have a numerical goal to it. If I can't measure that I put a dollar in and I got $2 out, it's a bad idea. That's basically, it's like trending towards automation. It's like the human element has been removed, especially in B2B. I think B2C is a little different, like just that context we're talking. I think like sales leaders, CMOs, et cetera, they're so afraid to do anything that can't be perfectly measured. And that creates this vicious cycle that people might not have realized for a while, because up until like 2 years ago, we had this 10-year period of just like, shit was easy. If you just showed up and did the bare minimum in go-to-market, like, there was a good chance it was going to work. You'd have a half-decent product, a half-decent ad strategy, a half-decent outbound strategy. And like, you were probably going to hit your goals and raise some more money and keep going. And we don't really live in that era anymore. So when I think about marketing ideas and when our team thinks about them, we tend to think from almost like a, I guess as cheesy as it sounds, kind of like a vibe first mentality.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
We think more from the perspective of like, how are people going to feel about this? And it's like, I care about the numbers, obviously. I'm trying to run a business, not just like do marketing ideas for fun. But the numbers aren't where we start when we think about ideas. We think about how are people going to react to this. Is it fun? Is it interesting? Is it exciting? Is it zigging where others are zagging? Those are the sorts of questions we ask ourselves when we talk about ideas internally.
Love that. So let's try to contextualize this into a real world example. A vibe first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Example. Let's contextualize this into a vibe first example. You've got a marketer who's just started that's like, hey, I'm big on email, right? And there's all, decades worth of literature on how to run a successful email marketing campaign. And they're like, yeah, I'm going to unfurl this narrative over the course of 12 emails. Every couple is going to have, a hard offer, like a demo request. Most will have a soft offer, like download this asset or, join us at this event or whatever. So somebody comes to you and says that, where do you zag there?
You hit the nail on the head. You said there's tons of literature out there on how to do it. So everybody is following the same playbook. This is how to do an email campaign. This is how to do LinkedIn ads. This is how to do outbound email. So without realizing it, you're just doing your own version of the same thing everybody else is doing. I like to use this line. It's like, this is more like sales relay, but it applies to marketing as well, where you can be the best. You have the best timing, the best messaging. The problem is there is so much noise out there. It doesn't matter. Sure. You're still not going to sound out, right? Like, you can have the best crafted email campaign, perfect timing of when to do hard offer versus soft offer. Like, you've thought about it scientifically. I get 100 emails a day that I don't read. I missed your email.
Yeah.
It was perfect. It was perfectly timed for me. I hit delete because I get too many emails, right? Like, that's the reality of these like perfectly scientifically driven, ad driven, algorithmic driven campaigns. Like, it just creates a bunch of sameness. So that's where it starts, is like, what are you doing that's different, right? If it's not looking at your competitors and be like, oh, they're doing email marketing, therefore I have to do email marketing, or this is how, I don't know, insert company did email marketing 6 years ago, so that's what I'm gonna take inspiration from. It's like, by the time you see an idea posted on LinkedIn, that idea probably doesn't work anymore. Because like, once it's reached that like zeitgeist level of like everybody's talking about it, everybody's also doing it. So that's the starting point. And it's, the unfortunate truth is, the problem starts with leaders, right? Not with marketers. So I get a lot of more, junior to mid-level marketers or salespeople who are asking me that sort of question. And the problem is, it doesn't matter because their boss and their manager is expecting these algorithmic measurable campaigns. So they never get to the point where they're given that leeway to try things, to be creative, to be human first. So it has to start at that level.
What's an example of your most, well, it could be your favorite, because we don't necessarily, it's not necessarily quantifiable in a sort of with, and by the way, I'm not mocking, I love Vibe First. I'm honestly going with that. I just want to keep mentioning it, but I realize you don't know me. And so I'm
no,
just
all letting good.
You know that this is pure validation. So like, what's an example of your favorite sort of Vibe First campaign or thing that you did that was totally out of the box? How did you get there? What did it look like? I can't wait.
I think that the funny thing is, I don't even think it was that out of the box. It's just the bar is so low in B2B that people reacted like it was so out of the box.
Like us, we're like, yeah.
We sponsored Pavilion's GTM23 event in Nashville last October. And it was kind of a spur of the moment decision. We're like, yeah, we're trying to get in front of more sales and go to marketing leaders. Let's do it. Let's figure it out on the fly. And then 3 weeks before the event, we're like, we have a booth at this thing. Like, what are we going to do at this booth? Like, we're like, we're just going to show up and like collect leads, or like, we're going to get a computer and have a demo of the product. Like that's just, and a lot of it, we kind of went to our own thinking. It was like, if I went to an event as an attendee, would that interest me? And that's also like a broader thing here is like people don't think about that. They think they're being different, but that's also not how they buy or how they act with marketing. So we, our whole product, we talk a lot about like, you know, warm intros as a premise of our product. So we were joking around like, oh, like warm pipeline instead of a cold pipeline. We ended up talking about like, what if we did like a Hot Ones style show, which is like the chicken wing show where they have celebrities eat increasingly spicy wings. And we were like, let's say we're going to put the heat back into your pipeline. It was like, it was very much a spur of the moment idea. But what we did was we ended up framing our entire booth around that. So there was literally no traditional badge scanning, no place to get a demo of our product. Like we actually had a professional film crew come in with three cameras and lights and microphones. So right out of the gate, when you walked into the exhibit hall, you're like, booth with a table, booth with a table and a TV, booth with a table, booth with a table and a TV, booth with a table, like all. And then it's like lights and cameras and microphones and like, what is going on over there? So I think that right out of the gate caught people off guard. And then the entire booth was just us filming little micro episodes of me interviewing someone as we ate five increasingly spicy wings. But we went all the way. We got custom hot sauce, custom bottles. It was like the warm intro sauce, the SDR tiers. I'm forgetting what the other ones were, but they were all themed.
You gotta be kidding me, man.
We had the custom backdrop.
Better than I thought.
We went all in on it. And that's part of it, right? It's like we could have had a half-assed idea, but once we had the idea, we fully committed to it. And we had, I think over the course of, it was a two-day event. There was about 750 attendees. 2 weeks before the event, we actually put out a little mini website and kind of advertised we were going to do it because we wanted to try to get some people to pre-sign up. So we weren't just like trying to like, we didn't know how many people were going to do it. We had 190 people out of a 700 person event pre-sign up to want to be a guest on this live show.
Amazing.
So like 25% of the entire event were like, I want to come to your booth before they even knew who we were. You have to keep in mind, we hadn't publicly launched like what Comstar is today at this point. We had no real like following. Like these are all people that were hearing about us for the first time. And like, there's so many more details I can go into, but that I think is of our more recent examples, one of my favorites.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean,
amazing.
Yeah. And
we did it really poorly too. Like there's so many learnings on what I would do differently if I were to do it again.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. But if you didn't do it, we wouldn't, none of us would know. Like, I mean, it's a great idea for all of us. That's amazing. And so you filmed just like a mini episode. Matt's going to punch me for that. I just got it because I like really spicy wings.
Yeah.
Was the fifth wing like a knock you out like type of spice? Because that's really important to me.
We did some quick testing and originally the fifth one was like, you're going to be on the ground crying, sort of like not talking for an hour. And we realized like people when we're at a live event might not really love that if we're taking them out of commission for the rest of the event after they come do this with us for that day. So we ended up toning it down. It was still like, we got reacts. People were like, we had someone someone swore at me. They took a bite and they're like, fuck you. And I was like, whoa. And they're like, this is just too spicy. And I was like, all right, sorry. I really like spicy food, which is also good because I had 132 wings over 2 days. And like,
yeah,
they were spicy. The bigger issue was actually just like the amount of wings I ate. I kind of underestimated that problem. And then of course the second day that morning, I actually gave a talk at the event and I'd eaten 70 something wings the day before, spicy food and all that. I'm standing up on stage at 9 a.m. and I'm like, oh, I'm not exactly feeling too well right now. I got like I got the heat of the lights. It's like, oh boy, I'm going to stumble through this talk. It's not going to be pretty.
That's amazing. What'd you do with the episodes and the video and like, how'd you release them?
So we haven't released them yet. I guess that's one of the learnings of where we kind of messed up. We messed up on editing them and there's a whole long story there. So actually by the time this episode comes out, maybe they'll be live because they're going live in like a week or two. And what we're doing to keep the campaign going is we actually ordered more of the custom hot sauce. So we have about, there were five different bottles. We got 100 of each bottle. So about 500 total. And we're doing a whole campaign where, we're going to release the episodes and have a little mini website where you can actually buy the hot sauce for yourself if you want. Or the idea is like put some heat back into your pipeline and send a bottle to a prospect who's ghosted you to remind them of like the heat that they're missing. So we're framing it as like a, you should send a bottle of our hot sauce to one of your customers. Just spend $10, send a bottle. It's not structured for us to make money. It's really just a, you know, cover our costs thing. So we're going to kind of reactivate the campaign, bring the hot sauce back, make it accessible to get your own bottles, all that sort of stuff.
That is so cool. I love it when a brand has legs like that, when it transitions from being, you know, an activation all the way through to a larger scale campaign. I think that's so cool. I got to tell you, like, you know, when I first saw the video, I was like, this is so cool. And I was like, that's just an amazing way to run a booth at an event. But I had no idea the legs, like, really well thought out. Like, I get a very good sense for the vibe. Craig?
There you go.
Boom. There we go.
Yeah.
We had people coming by our booth. We were like finishing up on the second day. And people were like, can I film? So to give you an idea of how successful our booth was, at 4 p.m. the second day, the event was over. By 5 p.m., all the other booths had packed up. They'd gone home. They'd like full, like, that also tells you how simple their booths were, right? That in less than an hour, they were packed up and done.
Yeah, of course.
We were there for 4 hours after the event ended, filming episodes with people staying behind, waiting in line to be a guest on the show. So
that
our booth
incredible.
Outlived the actual event by multiple hours.
Oh my gosh.
They had like crews coming in, like taking down the signs and all like the, you know, the stuff of the event. And we're like there filming.
Yeah. You know, when the Teamsters start rolling in, you're like, it should be time for me to get out of here, but that's amazing. Yeah.
No, not with the, that is it. That is okay. That show surprised me even more. That's amazing. I mean, sorry, that show, that, let's call it that campaign, that how you handle that show. I would just like, for me, it's incredible because I was trying to think like back to what we were trying to talk about in the start, which is like, if you want something where the I don't know, Matt, if I would say like the other booth people would say that this is what we do and that's why they did it. I just don't know that everyone sort of taken a step back and said, you know, how can we disrupt? Right.
It's because they're there for a metric, right? They're there for booth scans. That's what they're being measured on. Yeah. So they're building for that and they're activating for that. But I don't know about you. When's the last time a booth scan actually led to a deal? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a touch point on a customer journey. But like, I think you're right to assume that it's never going to be the tipping point for why somebody goes from I'm completely unaware of this brand to now suddenly I'm buying something from them. But I think when you push it to the limit the way you did in Nashville, you actually can create an experience like that. Now, I wonder, prior to my life working in tech, I worked in consumer packaged goods and trade shows in that world, whether it's, food and beverage or, you know, any other commoditized product. Like, those trade shows operate on a significantly grander scale. They think about experience in booth. I think you're right to point out earlier in the episode that on the B2B side, everything's just a little bit dulled out, right? And highly, highly metrics driven. So you're going to Dreamforce, you've got the X precious metal level booth. Your expectation is that you're going to get, 1,200 scans a day. You're going to book X amount of meetings, derive X amount of pipeline. And so you do like the very traditional work back model of like, hey, how much do we expect that we're going to book from this show? And so how many leads do we need? How many qualified leads? How many meetings? How many opportunities, et cetera? But I think when you take an approach like yours, it's a swing because you could airball it.
Yeah.
Right. You could absolutely, it could be like, people are like, what? We're all vegan. What do you mean chicken? Like, absolutely not. This isn't happening. But the upside potential is so much bigger. And clearly you left a lasting impression because I guarantee everybody who either didn't record on that show or didn't have an opportunity to come by the booth, at the very least knew about the booth, right? Because even in the sort of the virality of how that how the imagery and sort of the videos of your booth went out into places like LinkedIn, suddenly it was not 750 people that were just at a show, but it was like sort of everybody on LinkedIn taking a look at what you guys were doing.
It reminds me of like a good billboard, right? It's like a good billboard doesn't get the impressions because you see the billboard. It's like the photo of it being shared is actually what is the goal. And we haven't even released the videos yet. So like we have this long tail of like those booths, they put their money in, they got their leads potentially, the end, it's over.
Yeah.
We have 18 episodes of this show that we're going to start releasing over the next 20 weeks. It's like half a year's worth of content there, plus clips, plus the ongoing stuff. we got invited to go to another event and they're giving us a booth for free. They're waiving the sponsorship cost for us to bring that activation to the event because they want it at the event. So we're getting a $20,000 booth for free because we're bringing an interesting experience rather than essentially an advertisement to the event.
No, oh, man, incredible, incredible.
And the total thing cost us to get, yeah, like even with the sponsorship, the total cost was like $20,000 for this event. Like it's dirt cheap in the grand scheme of things compared to what we could have done with that money.
Yeah,
totally. And the chicken wing market in Nashville just went through the roof.
Oh yeah, and the theming of it working with, you know, being in Nashville, doing spicy wings, it was just like the whole, it just fit perfectly, which was kind of unintended. Yeah, it wasn't because it was Nashville. It was just, we just rolled with it.
Yeah, I had shorted chicken wing stock and I got a real bone to pick with you.
I do
well,
like
it's time to start buying.
You mentioned your background in CPG and stuff. And I would say we take a lot more inspiration from like consumer influencers and consumer brands than we do from B2B brands. Like my favorite inspiration, do you know Mischief? They're like,
yeah, of course. Yeah, I got a pair of their shoes. Not the big red boots, but super normals.
You gonna need Comstore shoes soon?
All right.
these are actual custom shoes that we're making for a future campaign.
Nice. Nice. Well, you're in Europe, so size 46.
Should I be embarrassed that I don't know Mischief or
your kids do.
I don't know how to describe. They started as like an art collective doing kind of like art / consumer stunts. Like the one that I think I first saw was they released an ATM in New York City. They call it the High Score ATM. So it had a video screen above it. And when you used it to check your balance, it took a photo of you and it showed the top 10 people with the highest balance who had used the ATM on the screen. So they started by doing these sort of like art project stunt things. And then they started doing product drops. They've done weird shoes. They've kind of like really moved into the sneaker market, but they did like, they dropped cologne that smells like WD-40. They did a couple other things.
Yeah,
they're like
they sold a car key fobs.
Yeah.
Multiple car key fobs to a single car. So you could buy this car key fob and then you could get the GPS location of where it was and all these people could just take the car and drive off with it.
They did one with Mr. Beast. They did the Lamborghini one where you was like you buy a Lamborghini for $50, but you know 9,950 of them are going to be a little Hot Wheels Lamborghini. 50 of them were like a remote controlled Lamborghini and one was a real Lamborghini, but you didn't know which one you were getting when you made the purchase. Like they've done lots of weird fun stunts like that. And I think B2B needs more of that vibe and less of the like, I go to a booth, I scan a thing, I give you a gated downloadable and then I hit you with 37 emails once you've downloaded it until you tell me to fuck off. Yeah. And like, we need more of what Mischief is doing and less of what B2B has been doing for the last 10 years.
For sure.
Or at the very least, we need to come somewhere in the middle of all that.
Yeah. I'm not saying that the B2B strategies don't work, but I guess based on the success most companies are having, it seems like maybe they don't. At least not the way they used to. Yeah. There's always a place for every strategy, of course.
Sure.
Totally. But in particular, from an awareness perspective, a launch perspective, like this was an incredible example here.
For pure top of funnel, it couldn't have gone better.
Oh my word, man. This is just like a win and a half. And I'm on the Mischief site. So as Matt can tell you, you shouldn't have distracted me. Let me close this here.
Sorry. Yeah. Look at it when we're done. It's a fascinating website. It's really interesting to spend some time on though.
So I jumped in when we were talking about the million impressions. Is that a good topic, Matt, or am I going down the
road? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, because you didn't just do an on-site activation that went viral. You also ran a social campaign that went viral. And everybody on the planet, here's what I'll say. It's like, I don't
viral
know how
relative,
many people are.
I will just say.
Yeah, sure. Psy still has the most views on YouTube with Gangnam Style. But
really? I love that guy.
Yeah, I think so. I could be wrong. Fact check me after.
Matt was incorrect. Gangnam Style by Psy is currently 10th in all-time views on YouTube with 509 billion views since 2012. It is far behind the more than 14 billion views accumulated by Pinkfong's Baby Shark Dance.
I think most people are not necessarily game for hey, I'm going to really roll the dice at this booth at this big event, right? Like it takes real like sort of gumption to run a campaign like that. But most people would tell you that they would love to be able to create content on LinkedIn that's getting more than like the typical branded 40 likes, mostly from the employees, 3 comments, mostly from the employees, you know, 4 shares, mostly from the employees. Like, and you ran a campaign that went extraordinarily well. And I'd love to double click into that and just learn a little bit more about that from, you know, in the same way we talked about the booth, right? Like, how did you come up with it? How did you execute? And what were some of the results that you saw?
I think for starters, a lot of the success of that started in part with the chicken wings.
Okay.
And so there's a broader theme here, I think, which is a lot of like not just vibes, but a lot of our marketing and our strategy is built around creating authentic connections with our market. It's not just like, hey, do you want to buy? No, okay, cool. Hey, do you want to buy now? All right, no, cool. Like that's what most go-to-market strategies really are if you really boil mm-hmm. them down to their simplest form. So once again, if we were just a normal booth, yeah, we might have talked to some folks, made some good relationships, gotten a few leads. People wouldn't have remembered it. They wouldn't have gotten to know us. They wouldn't have gotten to know us as people. There wouldn't have been this human element. So when we kind of publicly launched new Comsor about a month ago now, we went to all the people who we built relationships with over the last 3 or 4 months, including people who'd come by the booth, people who'd been guests on the booth. And we just said, hey, do you want to help us spread the word? We're going to do this fun little activation. And we had like 150 people say yes. And actually, one of the big learnings was I didn't ask some of the bigger names because I was like, there's no way this person's going to say yes. They charge money for posts. And then on the day of, they were like, why didn't you ask me to help? And I was like, I kind of assumed you would say no. I should have asked. But because for the 3 to 4 months leading up to this launch, we had been focused on this like authentic connection, vibe-based, get to know people, be humans first, not a brand first. People were very willing to be like, yeah, I love you guys. Of course I want to help. Like, I'm not even a customer. I like what you guys did. It was really fun. Thanks for having me on the Hot One show. It was a blast. So there was this social capital that we built up over 3 to 4 months. So when we asked people if they would be willing to do something, a metric shit ton of them said yes, at least relative to our size and our scale. So that was step one, was actually like creating the environment in which people wanted to be a part of what we were doing. And that's the thing, is like, I just don't think a lot of marketing create something that you want to be a part of. And if you think about the best mm-hmm. consumer brands, as a quick sidebar, people say that they're kind of like cults, right? Nike, Apple, mm-hmm. folks like that. Like, they've transcended the product. Like, I'm part of Apple. I'm an Apple fanboy, or I'm right. a Nike fanboy. And like, yeah. B2B doesn't do that because they don't market in a way that creates something you want to be a part of. So we put this together. We had a whole plan. We did some really good video content that we filmed together as a team. I think one of the reasons it worked really well was we didn't ask everyone just to post the same thing. And I think a lot of companies, when they do these like influencer LinkedIn activations, they get everyone to post like the same image, but maybe with their photo changed out, and it's like the same copy. And they're just like, they're just trying to flood LinkedIn or the internet in general with the same message. Instead, we asked people to share, we gave them kind of 3 different like prompt starters. Like, our whole business model, we call ourselves the House of Authentic Connections. So we wanted them to share a story on how their network or authentic connections have had an impact on them personally and professionally. So suddenly each post was unique and a personal story. And like, yes, they all kind of ended with the same message, but they were all different, unique posts that enabled it to actually not feel like it was just copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste. So each post became a unique thing to engage with. It wasn't like once you'd seen 1 or 2, you're like, oh my God, another person, just scroll past another person. So each individual post got more legs, which meant each individual post was seen by more people. So it had this whole compounding effect. And it just felt a lot more natural. It didn't feel like we'd just gone out and paid a bunch of people to parrot the same message. There was an element of like their own personality and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like an influencer would do a video and a post related to your launch.
Yeah.
And you did it on a sequential basis, or did you send them all out at once?
I wouldn't really even call it traditional influencer. We didn't pay anybody anything. This was just us asking if they wanted to participate, and they said yes. A lot of people, there were some like snarky posts that day were like, oh wow, like look at Comsor blowing their marketing budget, paying people to talk about them. And it was like, we We spent $0 on that day.
Got it. So you didn't use the Kardashians. I understand.
No. It was all people that were like kind of like in our ICP. It was like sales and marketing people, and so
totally.
And basically, what they just ended their message with like, "Congrats to Comscore on launching the House of Authentic Connections." But leading up to that was like their own personal story or kind of related thing to what we'd been doing. Some people recorded videos showing off how they were using the product already without us asking them to. Some of them just kind of did a story on like what their network means to them. Some of them just shared a story about like how they met our team and loved our team and why they were supporting us. You got all different types of stories. We can't see every impression on everyone's post, but we estimate we got between 1 and 1.5, 1.6 million unique impressions that day.
Incredible.
Which by LinkedIn standards is like, is a lot.
And what was the total number of participants that you had? About 150?
About 150, yeah.
Jeez.
That's still, that number, yeah, it's like the million number or 1.5 million numbers to the layman. That's huge, and it is. But like 150 contributors based on where you guys are as an organization, that's a huge number. I mean,
yeah,
huge.
Especially once again, like I can't emphasize that. We didn't pay anybody anything. Right. Nobody posted because they were being incentivized to. And I think once again, that's why it's important. It's a result of the way we'd been marketing leading up to that point. Like we wouldn't have been able to just like do this campaign in a vacuum. This was, while it might feel like an overnight success, and yeah, it was like a week of planning to put it together, it was 4 to 6 months of buildup to make it possible.
The transaction is presented by Ringmaster, the go-to branded podcast team. You know, when Craig and I were thinking of starting this podcast, we had all the ideas in the world. But you know, all the ideas in the world won't get you a great podcast. That's where Ringmaster comes in. They handle the creative, book guests, and do all the production for the podcast so we can focus on what we do best, talk to one another and our amazing guests. To discover how your company can leverage B2B podcasts to deliver outsized ROI, visit ringmaster.com today.
So when you talk about that 4 to 6 months of buildup, can we unpack that a little bit? Just because I think, you know, there are lots of people who have, you know, awesome customers and, you know, they want to, you know, sort of bring them into the brand, bring them closer to the brand. But like, you know, they can't get on a plane and fly to each one of them, take them out to dinner, take them out to lunch, learn all that stuff. So there was some level of scale to what you guys were doing while also maintaining a level of one-to-one personal connection. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's fascinating to me, even in addition to what you did through the campaign.
I think I don't know if I have like an easy, clean answer to that, because it's like, it's a lot of immeasurable vibey stuff, right?
Yeah.
That went into it.
Yeah.
But a lot of it came down to, I think one of the biggest problems right now when you go to market is that everything is built on the assumption of a binary outcome, right? Marketing and sales are built on the assumption of a closed one or a closed loss deal. That's it. In reality, though, that's just not the way it works, right? Like maybe I try to sell to you now, but you don't, but maybe in a year you're a different role, or you end up being, you know, someone who refers business to us or a partner, or we end up hiring you. Like there's so many possible outcomes. So our approach was basically, how do we foster a network of people who give a shit about what we're doing? That's the simplest way to put it. And that's customers, that's friends, that's partners, that's fans. It's a mix of all of them. I think it comes down to, it's a combination of our team's approach to marketing and social strategy, which has always been more of like a conversation rather than a broadcast. I think most marketing is like, I have a thing, look at my thing, push it out there, push it out through posts. Yeah. Like, and that's where you get those examples of like the social post with 40 likes and 3 comments. Cause like, why do I as an individual give a shit about that? Right. So approaching it in this like conversational manner, I think not taking ourselves too seriously. I mean, my title on LinkedIn is like El Rey del Dinos, right? It's like, I'm clearly not trying too hard, even though it's like I am. It's a different kind of blend. And then a lot of it's just been like conversations. It's like a lot of doing things that don't scale, talking to people. Cause it's like, a lot of it was like, we were doing early customer research. We were doing early demos. We were onboarding beta users. So like there was product and business value while we were doing those conversations. But we didn't just treat it as like, oh, you're not going to be a customer right now. All right, I'll come back to you later. It was like, how do we keep that conversation going? It was like, some of those people joined a Slack group. Like we've got a couple hundred people that are not customers yet that are hanging out in a Slack group designed for our customers, just because they want to hang out and talk to our team. Like, that's not how most marketing ends up working.
I have a quick question that might be a diversion, but first I just want to ask you guys, technically I have two.
Yeah.
So one is for Matt and for Matt, video. How as a organization, a B2B go-to-market organization, how should I think about public video? Because honestly, I love it in snippet. I'm becoming like a TikTok amount of attention, but I do really like quick video, but like, I don't know. Is that basically the reality? Am I the reality, or how else should we be thinking about it?
Yeah. I mean, you're falling into what everybody else has already fallen into, right? It's like people like video more than
late.
The,
you know, I'm a late adopter.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's people probably adopted after you. There might be four or five, but people consume video. They like it. You know, they like video with text laid over it. They want to see it. They want to read it. If they have an opportunity to listen to it in real time, they'll listen to it. But like, they want things that are quick. And we know, you know, just from the long form written content, transition to blogs, transition to microblogs, transition to posts, transitions to tweets, right? The same thing is true for, do you really want to sit and watch somebody's hour long presentation, or do you want the highlights of it, right? And like, part of the reason why podcasts work so well is, you know, and especially this one, The Transaction, please like and subscribe, is that, you know, people can play this in the background, right? It's like a way for them to get content in a very, you know, sort of efficient manner. And I think the rise of podcasts, the rise of short form video all have to do with people's inability to have lots of time for specific types of attention that they grant to things. I mean, like, how many of us watch TV, but we're really working while we're watching TV or looking at something else? It's just, there's so many things that are demanding our attention that there's just not time to look at long form stuff anymore. So video is a great way to get an idea across in a very short way. And then, you know, obviously with the subtitles, people have the opportunity to say, "Ooh, there's a video. I like video. I can't really listen to it because I'm sitting at my desk at work, but I'll read along." So what I see just from posts that we put out that are largely text-based versus posts that we put out that are video-based is the video-based get way more engagement, way more shares, way more comments. It just grabs people's attention much, much more efficiently.
Yeah, I agree. I think also if you're trying to build an authentic brand that puts the people behind the brand first, video is a must, right? Because that's how you get to know the people, right? Like if I write a text post, it's like, you can realistically like take most text posts and like just change the name of who wrote it. And like, yeah, I've got my own style, but like text is, there's only so much uniqueness you can get across in text.
Yeah.
Video. Yeah. Like I found that like, we're investing even more in video than we have. We have a full-time video producer who joined our team in January. Like it's a big part of our strategy for the rest of this year and moving forward. And the videos we've done so far, our video editor calls it anti-editing. Where it's like, it's not the quick paced Mr. Beast style. It's more, you know, the editing isn't quite as obvious. There's lots of editing going on. And I've noticed she leaves in my weird, like, oh, oops, that was a dumb thing. Don't say that. And people love that. People love the whole, sure. like, get yeah. to know Mac as a person, not just Mac as a message. I think that's really, that's what video lets you do that text doesn't.
Got it. I forgot my second question. Here's one comment though. Sorry about that. That was interesting. I thought I'd just throw that out there, but that it is important because I think people do say, well, like, you know, how should we, you know, as we think about new playbooks for content distribution and those things, video is clearly one of them. I think one of the things that ties back to what Mac led with is to do, so Mac is a founder or the chairman of Dinosaurs or El Rey de Dinos. And that's, you know, for most marketers to be able to take leaps like this, it is hard. Like you either have to be extremely empowered, but more likely you need a founder or CEO that's willing to think differently, right? I mean, in order to, because you do have to think differently here. And you do have to believe that in the long run.
I'm lucky that I like doing weird marketing. Like that's,
yeah,
it's also, it turns out it's something I'm apparently pretty good at. So it's a nice little competitive advantage. But I've spoken to a few marketers who've pointed to some of the things we've done and like showing that it's worked, and they've been able to get some leeway internally because it's, you need to have, for most people, when you go to your boss, you need to have something you point to prove that your idea is going to work. They're not going to let you take a full leap of faith in the dark. Like when I'm the founder, I mean, no one's going to stop me. I can do it, right? It's a different dynamic for sure.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's true is, you know, when a CEO leads out in front, you get way more engagement, right? Like, hey, this company's CEO is doing this. This is amazing. Like, you know, like
that's a good point.
Let's just think about things like at a very high level. Like, do any of us know the name of the best marketer that's ever been at Apple? No, but we know Steve Jobs and we know Tim Cook, right? Like, these guys are leading out in front, right? Like, we don't know the marketer at Facebook. We know Mark Zuckerberg. Craig and I know a lot of the marketers from Salesforce, but Mark's at the forefront of everything, right? And so, like, having a CEO that's willing to be the face of the organization, participate in the marketing, do things like videos, write a lot of content online, like, that is a marketer's secret weapon. And it,
I will say, by the way, that does not come naturally to me. Like, I'm the I'm the kid who was like, I can't talk in front of the class. Like, if you told me 10 years ago that I would be doing podcasts, recording videos of myself, speaking on stages, writing on LinkedIn, I'd be like absolutely not. And it was a conscious decision about 9 months ago to start taking, it started by taking LinkedIn from a written perspective seriously. And it's kind of snowballed into all the other stuff we're doing. I would say most days it doesn't feel natural.
Sure.
So I think I just say that for, like, you know, I speak to a lot of founders who say the same thing. We're like, I don't have this like natural extrovert bone that you have, Mac. And I'm like, I'm not an extrovert. I this feels deeply unnatural to me. Even like sitting on a podcast, writing a LinkedIn post, recording a video, like, I do it because I can I'm starting to learn to like it, I'll say, and it's becoming more natural, and it becomes a bit of like a sixth sense the more you do it. But the first 6 months of it was pure, just like forcing myself to do it because I believed it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is a key point though, Matt. And so even though Mac doesn't find it natural, he's made, you know, he's tied to the authenticity of the brand and like part of, I wonder if there's data, by the way, that tell, because you're like, it's better, it's a secret weapon for the marketer, but I wonder if it's table stakes now. Especially with everything happening on LinkedIn, you need your CEO or founder out there.
If you just looked at it through the lens of LinkedIn, take a look at a brand, any brand. Look at when the brand makes a post from the brand's LinkedIn, and then look when a CEO makes a post, right? Like, the brand post, if you're lucky, is going to get 100 likes and a dozen or so comments. The CEO, if they are active on LinkedIn, is going to get hundreds of comments, hundreds of likes, like, or maybe not hundreds of comments, but dozens of comments.
More than the brand, at the very least, yeah.
Yes, by a significant amount. We're not talking 2-to-1, we're talking more like 10-to-1.
But it can't be a random act.
Yes, it cannot be random.
And it has to be considered, yeah, like the first 3 months of me taking LinkedIn seriously didn't move the needle at all. Like, nothing happened, right? It's like, and then suddenly it starts working, and now it's like, oh, it's like, it's working more consistently. And it's like, I would say 6 months ago, there were more days where it felt like it wasn't working than working. Now it feels like there's more days where it's working than not working. You know, there's always the algorithm game, and there's always days where it works better than others. But that's the other thing that I think a lot of marketers, CEOs, leaders are scared by, with like, either whether it's the personal brand stuff, whether it's the vibe based stuff. It's not just the lack of measurement. It's also the time it takes, but it's,
oh yeah.
I've used the analogy before that I think a lot of marketing strategies or sales strategies are like, every time you want a vegetable, you go to the store and you buy a vegetable. So it's just like, I want a vegetable, I pay a dollar. I want another vegetable, I pay a dollar. Versus like, a lot of what we're doing is more akin to like growing your own garden, right? It's like, you pay once, you plant it. Yeah, you got to nurture it. Yeah, it's going to take a little bit longer. But once it works, it's cheaper, it's faster, and it tastes better.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
When you say I took LinkedIn seriously, just for the other we're just kind of on this theme here. What does that mean?
I think maybe the better word is intentionally rather than seriously. I would say up until about 9 months ago, to give you an idea, I didn't have a LinkedIn account when I started Comstor until an investor told me it was kind of sketchy to invest in a founder who had no online presence. And I was like, fine, I'll make a LinkedIn account, damn it.
Wow, you are, man. Jeez.
Yeah, I have no Facebook account. I have no TikTok account. I have no Snapchat account. I am not a social media native person. I am not like the average person my age when it comes to that, for sure. So I had the account, had it for like 4 years. And of course, you know, we would post, you know, probably once every few months. Oh, here's a product update, or we're announcing we raised a round, like the classic stuff you see like founders do on LinkedIn. And like, yeah, you get a little bump of engagement and then nothing. And just because of like the title, you get people connecting with you. So like, yeah, you get to a couple thousand followers without really doing much work that way over 2 or 3 years. But taking it intentionally meant that I was just, I guess I started publishing content is really what that means. I started actually putting things out there that weren't just, hey, look, my company has news to share.
Yeah.
That's great.
Love that.
Honestly. I mean, I don't, you certainly did not disappoint me today, man. I'm glad I figured out how to get on this thing. Yeah. I mean, this is really great and really interesting. I think the world's changing. What I actually think one big takeaway for me was that even though you're doing these remarkable things, and yes, there was work, but you're still, there's still this agility. There's still like, you know what I mean? And like, you guys just still made it happen. Like, we don't, there's no story of hiring this multi-million dollar agency to come in for ideas. Like it's, and it's also, that's one, right? There's like, when someone comes to me and says they can't do it, I just—
Shout out to our awesome, tiny, scrappy team. Our entire sales, marketing, all, our entire team that's not product and engineering is only 4 people. For reference, myself.
It's amazing.
Right.
So it's not, but you not guys a big rallied team.
You rallied around this thing that you did. It's just, it means, you know, it shouldn't be for everyone that you can do it. A founder and CEO who wasn't even on LinkedIn is now a influencer on LinkedIn. I mean, these things can be done, right? These things can be done. The ideas are really important and incredible and blew me away, but the fact that they're doable.
I think it's another kind of benefit related to that is that what we're doing is also fun, which means the team gets behind it more. The team has fun with it. It's creating an environment where it's like, you should see some of the stupid ass ideas our team suggests. Where we're like, it's like, we're just like, yeah, some of the ideas we've talked about, we're like, yeah, we can never do that. Like, that's crazy and wild. But like, you need that sort of mentality for the good ones to be uncovered. And yeah, it's just more fun. It's a lot more fun than being this like, I'm going to do programmatic SEO, or I'm going to like schedule email campaigns and be purely scientific. Like, for some people, maybe that's right. But for our team, giving them that creative leeway has also like, they show up and get more done, have more fun with it. They're happier employees. Like, it's just, it's better internally and externally. It goes both ways. And that compounds on itself too. Better internally means like, I had someone last week say, they're like, I can so tell that your team is having fun with what they're doing.
That's incredible.
We made some stupid video that was like, I don't even remember what it was, but like, I think most B2B companies would have been like terrified to make a post like that, because it was like kind of, it was very stupid and like meme-y and whatnot. But people just want to know what they're buying from is like, they want to buy from real people. They want to know who you are. They want to get to know you. They don't want to know you as like Mac the salesperson who's going to like bullshit you to get a sale done. There's just like, put some humanity and creativity back into what you're doing. I mean, that's where you got to start.
Culture.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, the team's rallying around this thing is a culture building exercise. And it's like, it's not just the traditional, hey, end of quarter, let's do a call blitz day. This is like something really fun that brings people together. That's an amazing add-on there and benefit for sure.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Love it.
All right, Mac. Man. I mean, this was great. Yeah.
Blown away. Incredible. We're such fans of yours, even more so now, which sometimes I meet people and they're like, oh, I'm a fan of yours. And then after the conversation, they're like, yeah, not anymore. So,
I'm really glad it's not my case.
Like me. No. Yeah,
the more he records podcasts with you, the less of a fan he is, right?
It's true. Well, outstanding. This was so much fun. Thank you so much. We know that you're in a completely different time zone, so we appreciate you for joining us today. And as I said earlier, just as a closing call to action for everybody, this is the new feed. Please like and subscribe and listen for more guests like Mac on The Transaction.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Transaction. Craig and I really appreciate the fact that you've listened all the way to the end. What are you actually doing here? For show notes and other episodes, please visit us at thetransactionpod.com. Like and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other place you get your podcasts from. The transaction is sponsored and produced by Ringmaster, the go-to branded podcast team. To discover how your company can leverage B2B podcasts to deliver outsized ROI, visit ringmaster.com now. Either you have walked away from your podcast device, or this is playing somewhere in the background. Someone in your house would really like for you to shut this off now.